Hello and welcome to Studio Sessions, the big red and shiny podcast where we talk with artists about the ideas, inspiration, and processes that go into their work. I'm your host Matt Kuhlman, and in this episode I'll be talking with Alex Gingro. Alex earned a BA in visual art from Guilford College in Greensboro, North Carolina, a post-baccalaureate certificate from the School Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, and an MFA in painting from the Savannah College of Art and Design in Savannah, Georgia. Her recent series of paintings involves a bit of inside humor regarding the high art world by hand-painting precise, large-scale images of gallery tags that contain funny, narrative titles. All the tags she paints are based off of real New York galleries, and the titles of her paintings are directly related to the gallery they are associated with. Join me as Alex lets us in on the joke and explains the stories behind some of these pieces. Alex, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Thanks for meeting with me here.
Absolutely.
So, you got an interesting niche of work that you have carved out for yourself here, and do you want to kind of start by just kind of running down your history quick, your background, and then how you got to what you're doing right now?
Yeah, I am from Knoxville, Tennessee, and went to Guilford College in Greensboro, North Carolina, really small liberal arts school, and majored in art and English, and ended up dropping the English major in the last semester because my mom told me I was a terrible English major, and spent a couple of years there working for arts administration sort of stuff, and then decided that I really wanted to pursue a studio career in art. So I moved to Boston and I did a year at the museum school in Boston, and then went to graduate school at Savannah College of Art and Design. And as soon as I turned in my thesis paper and was finished with my thesis show, I hightailed it up to New York.
Yeah.
So I've been up here for about 6 years.
Mm-hmm. And at what point did you kind of develop the thought process that informs what you're doing?
Well, I've always been interested in text-based work. I love telling stories. I love reading. I love to write. And even when I look back through things that I did when I was a kid, I was writing all over the drawings that I was making. So I think that's just a really natural instinct that I have. But this particular body of work that I'm doing now, the sticker series, stemmed from working at the frame shop where I work in Midtown Manhattan. And I was collecting Provenance stickers and Fragile stickers and just collecting stuff because you got to do something to make the day go faster and make it more interesting. And one day a client was in the shop and she was trying to explain to us that we had to transfer the old Provenance stickers to the new frames. And she said, because all the money is in the label, you know. And we all kind of, in the shop, were like,
why don't you just throw everything off the line and keep the label?
Yeah, just keep the label. And so then I was like, I'm just going to, and really kind of out of spite was how the first one started. And I think, actually,
I like that, a spiteful series of artwork.
Yeah, I think a lot of, in fact, most of the series of works that I've done in the past that I've liked the most have come from spite.
Mm. Would you say it's like satirical in a sense? Or,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
lampooning the art world, because I noticed that a lot of them are like real galleries that you're
they're all real galleries. Yeah, every single one of them. Mm. And all the quotes are either directly something that I've overheard or something that someone has told me, or they're things that I would say to the gallery myself. So the text is all, I mean, there's a truth and a truism to all of the text. The speaker, however, is never identified. I think that's probably what keeps me out of libel and slander and all that
stuff. Oh, I heard someone else say that.
Yeah, there have been questions. Like, I never say, all the text has something to do with the gallery on the label that it's associated with, but I never identify if it's the gallerist, if it's a collector, or if it's an artist, or mm-hmm. who has actually said it.
But is each statement like directly tied to the gallery that it's tied to? Okay, so you might be at an opening at Pavel Zubov Gallery and overhear them saying, you're not the one for me, but I still give you mad props.
Yeah. I mean, that one, for example, is one that comes from me. Like, mm-hmm. that's But that's, nobody has to know that. So yeah. That's sort of the idea, is that the it's up to the viewer to sort of put him or herself in the situation to think where they might encounter something like that. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's interesting how you're describing your interest in always having to like write all over your drives and stuff, because I saw these as being very narrative, and mm-hmm. I was trying to kind of connect the dots between them all and see if there was like a running narrative that ran through all of them, but since there's different voices there, that didn't necessarily hold up in all of them, but it brings, it's like a story all in the label itself, like the place and the statement, and you put a, is that always the dimensions of the painting itself, like 22 by 30 inches?
Mm-hmm.
So it's very self-contained pieces.
Yeah, and they're very self. The idea was that they'd be very self-reflexive. So it kind of came out of that whole like all the value is in the or all the money is in the label. And I thought, well, screw that. I'm just going to draw the labels then.
Yeah.
So that was the idea. Was that, you know, if I were ever to show that piece at the said gallery, what's on the front would mirror exactly what's on the back. So it's this really self-reflexive thing, which is also has to do with concept of the whole series, which is that here I am, and here a lot of artists are right now, making fun of the art world and poking fun at market and value and all those kinds of things,
mm-hmm.
yet we're full participants, you know, so...
You're kind of resigned to that.
It's, exactly. So it's really self-reflexive in the way we maneuver in our day-to-day lives. So that was kind of the idea there.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever... kind of conceive of like what these pieces, if they were actual pieces of art, would look like, because that's kind of what I started doing automatically, is like, what would a piece called He Owes Me So Much Money look like?
Right. Exactly. I don't, I mean,
no. Or
I have
plan on extrapolating on it at some point, maybe, and having a series of all these actual pieces that go with the labels, or
no, I think that's up to the viewer.
Okay.
Like, you get your own piece that you think would maybe look like that.
Maybe I'll do a series.
You can do you. That would be an amazing derivative series. That would be so great if someone would, like, illustrate all of these.
Don't tempt me, I'll do it.
Sweet. Just make sure you invite me to the opening and we'll see it. That sounds awesome. That's the idea.
I guess it's also an interesting decision to actually, like, realistically paint all these out by hand like you do. Do you think it would be different if you just printed out labels and like kind of mass produced them and stuck them places, or do you do that and I'm just not aware of it? Or,
no. No. That's a big part of it for me. If you can see, I mean, you can kind of see it if you go closer to these, but they all have, they take, so there are the detail images on the website. They're all painted with teeny tiny, like triple zero and all the way up to zero size brushes. Tiny, tiny, tiny brushes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I really, really love the obsessive mark making of these tiny paintbrush strokes making up this thing that really is otherwise a disposable sticker, but
mm-hmm.
yet there's the value. So I wanted to make them sort of precious art objects. And if the idea is that a piece's provenance and its history is where the value is, and not just in the, you know, the passion and the art of the piece itself, then if nothing else, I was just going to render it really, really delicately and painstakingly, and
mm-hmm.
and take a lot of time to do it.
Do you think that comes off as hidden ever? Do people like see that labor in there? No. They think
not
it's just
often.
Something you like did really quickly.
Yeah, and a lot of times when people see them, they don't, you know, if they see them in, because people will see them online and stuff, and it does, it just looks like a sticker, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times when people see them in person, they'll say, oh, I didn't realize that they were going to be so big.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, but it says right there on the sticker that it's 22 by 30. But, I mean, I know that's really hard to comprehend when you're just looking quickly at stuff, so.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I love, what I find that I love about art in general is I love the kind of art that changes every step you get closer to it. So you have a reading of it at one distance, and then you take a couple steps closer and you have a whole different reading, and a whole different reading as you get up on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's another idea, or, you know, the reason that I render them that way is so that once you, you know, from a distance you get the humor, the narrative, you start making up your own little story, but then when you get closer on them, you do see like these teeny tiny brush strokes and like see the hand of the artist and realize there's a maker of some sort, which I like.
So what are some of your favorite, personal favorite quotations in these series?
I just have a bunch. And because we're being, because we're recording right now, I don't know how much of the stories I can tell about all sources. Of them. That's something.
If there's any safe stories, we can hear some of those.
There are definitely safe stories. The story, let's see. This one, the Mike Weiss sticker. He had a studio visit with a friend of mine, and Mike is just really, really excited about the gallery, about showing artists, about, I mean, he's just really an excitable man. Mm-hmm. And so he's just really, really eager, and he loves selling his program and selling the relationship that he likes to establish with his artists. Like, he's just really excited about things. And so he had a studio visit with a friend of mine a long while ago, and the artist was telling me about the interaction, and he said, "Oh, he might as well have humped my leg." And it was great. And then I was like, "I'm so sorry you said that in front of me, because I'm making it into a piece." Like, speak at your own peril in front of me about a lot of things. And so I made, there was a benefit for WagMag, which is the Williamsburg Art Gallery magazine. They do really great work, and they were having this benefit, and a friend asked me to donate a piece, so I made a study of this sticker and donated it, and got really excited because the woman, I was at the auction, and the woman who won it is a gallerist with whom I had wanted to work for a really long time. Nice. And I was so excited that she wanted the piece, and I was like, "Oh, let's make a studio visit. I'm so excited to finally do this with you." She's got a great vision, great artist. She's just a really cool person too. Mm. She was like, "Yeah, I'm going out of town. So we'll get back to, you know, when I get back, let's set something up." And I was like, "Yes." And then, like, 2 days later, somehow the image got back around to Mike. So about 2 days later, I get an email that's like, "Hey, kind of offended, but slightly intrigued. Let's have a studio visit." And I'm like, I was so scared. But we were going out of town. We were going to Hong Kong, like, in 2 days. I was like, "That sounds great, man. Let's do it when we get back from Hong Kong." And he's like, "No, let's do it now." And I was like, "Hey, humpy puppy, like, why don't you just wait a minute? Like, we're going somewhere. I can't do it right now." And he's like, yeah, let's just do it now. I'm going to come over." And he came over at, like, 8 o'clock on a Saturday night when we were leaving for Hong Kong at 6 o'clock the next morning. He's like, "This is great. This is exciting. Let's do a show." So that's how... So one of these actually... got me my first solo
That's
show.
That's exciting. Yeah. Good story moment.
Yeah, it worked. It worked. So, yeah, look out, galleries. I'm courting now. In fact, that's what that one's about. The Charlie James sticker.
Okay.
It's in the... Yeah, I just started it last night. I wanted to have some more work to show because I don't have a lot in the studio right now. So, started that one last night. I really like his gallery, so I hope that one makes it back around to him.
Yeah.
One of the first ones, let's see, was
the one that started the whole series.
Well, the very, very first one was the one about the, was this one. Well, all the money is in the label. So that one's from 2008.
Okay.
And I really didn't know. I was just kind of in the studio, and I wasn't liking what I was working on. And so... I just kind of did that on a whim and threw it off to the side, and every once in a while would show it to somebody, and they all thought it was really funny. Mm-hmm. And it never occurred to me that it would be, you know, a whole body of work. Excuse me. And then I collected a couple more stickers. I think the next one was Andrea Rosen Gallery. I was at an opening at the gallery one day, and I was walking around, and I had one of these stickers just because, like I said, I was just sort of collecting them. I mean, all those bags and boxes on the second shelf there, that's all source material.
Okay.
So those are all stickers that I cut off of things and collect. And I also take photographs of stickers when I go to art fairs and stuff. But and I knew that I had an Andrea Rosen sticker, but I was walking around during the opening, and there was a collector speaking with one of the directors, and she and her husband were standing there, and they were all drinking their wine, and the collector said, "Who do I have to sleep with to get a Tomaselli?" And the director was like, "Ah, Tomaselli, of course!" And they all, like, I mean, it was such a movie moment, and I was like, "Oh, what is this idiocy? What is this?" It was awful.
It's like unintentional satire, almost.
Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing, and it's kind of like, you know, when you are in the art world, you kind of, you really have to take everything with a grain of salt, you know, mm-hmm. like, we all need to be able to laugh at ourselves, because, yeah. I mean.
Take yourself too seriously, you turn into a douche.
Yeah, and these people can't be, I mean, some of these people, you cannot be serious, like for today at the frame shop, we're framing a lot of Damien Hirst, dot prints,
mm-hmm.
and the, are you familiar with the Gagosian Around the World contest, whatever you want to call it, that they did about a year ago?
Not really.
So about a year ago, Gagosian hosted shows at every single one of his galleries of the Damien Hirst dot paintings.
Mm-hmm.
They're dots.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. Like, they're dots. I mean, I know there's a little bit more behind it. Like, the colors are based off of pharmaceuticals, supposedly, etc., but whatever. They're fucking dots, and he doesn't paint them, and they're just dots.
Yeah.
Done. Okay. I mean, I think he has done some stuff that I find really intriguing conceptually, but...
For the most part, I consider him, like, a very successful con artist. That's just
yes.
me.
Yes! Which is fascinating. I mean...
Yeah.
That's not his shtick, but that's what... Yeah, like, that's one of the few things you can find interesting about him. But, so they... Gagosian, if you went to... During the run of the shows, if you went to all 8 galleries around the world, it's like 2 in New York, Los Angeles, Paris, London, Hong Kong, and I don't remember where the other 2 are right now, but... if you went and checked in, essentially, at each of the galleries, you would get a print. You got a Hirst print.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge print. It's like... It's, mm-hmm. you know, like, probably 40 by 50, maybe, around that, those dimensions, 50 mm-hmm. by 50. And apparently 128 people went around the world, spent the money to go around the world
to get
a fucking print.
Of a dot.
Of dot. Multiple dots. This one is multiple dots, yeah. But that's it, you know? So as these people, and we've gotten a ton of them coming into the shop because they just released them, like, I think a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been fun to ask these people what their story is. Like, there was a journalist who was doing a story on it. There was another woman who tried to make it into a food trip, but she just really felt compelled to fly around the world in a week. She went to LA and back in a day. LA and back in a day. And then spent like a night in Hong Kong and like...
Sounds terrible.
It sounds awful, right? For some dots. And these aren't even collectors. Like... It's crazy. So, I mean, if those people aren't able to laugh at themselves, if Damien Hirst is not able to laugh all the way to the bank, if Larry Gagosian is not, I mean...
It's kind of this bind for them, because to be in that situation, you almost have to take yourself seriously, so...
Yeah. But it's good fodder for the rest of us, I guess, you know?
Yeah. I don't think I'll ever be able to integrate into that high society, even if, like, I somehow, like, made something that fitted that and became successful, I would just feel like such an outsider, I think, because I think it takes a certain kind of breeding to, like,
yeah,
socially fit into that.
It really does. And then sometimes when, I don't know, I mean, sometimes you just, like, there have been functions that my husband and I have had to go to before, and we both kind of stand in the corner and we're like, hi, and he can never figure out if you kiss once, kiss twice, and he's really tall and he always lands on the lips, and like the whole thing is just awkward.
It sounds like a Seinfeld episode.
Oh god, 10 times over he keeps doing it too. But there's no way to learn how to do that stuff. You either feel comfortable, like you drink enough that you feel comfortable when you're there, or you just kind of run in, say hello, and get out. Because there's no way to... I don't think there's any way to really learn it.
Mm. I guess what's an interesting point is, like, where do you see this kind of work, like, fitting in? Like, what kind of galleries do you think that it belongs in, like, a higher-end gallery where it's kind of, like, poking fun at the viewers in a way sometimes? Or the other way, or it should be in a lesser, air quotes, place, but the audience would be more in on the joke.
I really don't know. I don't want to... I don't think there's an answer for that. I mean, one thing, the show that I had in August with Mike Weiss came really out of nowhere and came up quickly, like I said. And I've really enjoyed working with the gallery. The thing about that particular show, when and where it was, that was great for me was that it was in August when all the collectors are out in the Hamptons.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people who are in New York still are the art handlers and all the art industry people.
Mm-hmm.
So those were the people who were all in on the joke.
Okay.
And were all just like high-fiving, you
yeah.
know? And that felt really good. Like, I feel like those are people that, you know, because we look at something like this and be like, oh man, well, there was this one time and... So that part was kind of nice, but I don't really know where it goes after this. I mean, who hangs this shit in their house?
Yeah.
Who would want that? Like, I don't know. I have no idea, and I try not to make anything with that in mind.
Yeah.
I'd rather just make it because it feels natural and comes from a real place.
It's not made for consumption, it's made for production.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's partly why I hang on to a full-time job. You know, I can make whatever I want to because I have a steady paycheck. I don't have to try and scrape up a living on these. You know, I have such respect for people who can and who do, and I would love to be able to do that. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I'd quit that job in a heartbeat, but but I also like the flexibility that it affords me.
Mm. Do you see yourself continuing with this series for a while? Because in a way, it's kind of like repeating the same thing over and over, and you have like a large body of them now. You've been doing them for like 4 years or so. I guess it's 2013 now, 5 years.
Was it, we can say four. Four's fine. I have another 20 or so that are, you know, at the fingertips ready to go. And I don't think I would ever abandon it wholly, but yeah, I'm already thinking about other works and next bodies, and I don't ever want to be one of those artists who gets, you know, locked into a box, like, oh, that's the girl who does the stickers.
Yeah.
You know, so and I don't want to stay on this so long that that happens and then if I try to make another body of work, they're
why is
like,
the sticker
what
girl doing something different?
Right, exactly. so no, I'm definitely already thinking ahead of stuff.
Are you thinking of just approaching the same subject matter in a different way, or it's totally different?
Totally different.
What do you got in mind? Any glimpses?
No glimpses. I want to try and do some more. Gosh. Obviously, I haven't thought through this a whole lot yet, because I am not
able
to articulate
it. It's hard to predict the future.
Well, I mean, I've got the ideas, I've got the sketches, I've been doing little things, you know, piddles here and there, and waiting for, you know, for something to really come together like a dough. But it's gonna be a little more personal narrative kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I love personal narrative. I love artwork that has to do with personal narrative. But I always feel like I'm tiptoeing that line and towing that line of weepy, whiny, you know, like adolescent angst kind of thing, which can be beautiful if you do it right. It can be great if you do it right, but it can be awful if you fuck it up.
Yeah.
So I wanna straddle that line that makes it sort of electric between, like, it's so freaking personal that it appeals to everybody and, like, speaks to everybody in a way, because everybody has their sort of base human experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, when I saw the Glenn
Lyon. It would just be
kind
of like vignettes of things out of your life, or like a continuous story in a way.
No, it'd be more like specific things.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I went to see Glenn Ligon's one of my absolute favorite artists of all time. And he had a retrospective at the Whitney a couple of years ago. And I bawled and felt like I was sitting down with a best friend and he was telling me his life story and I was telling him my life story and that we were just like totally had these weird ass lines of communication or something like that. He is a gay black Yankee man. Like, you can't get any more opposite from my experience being a white southern straight woman. Like, those are polar opposites, and yet everything he was talking about and everything he was touching on was so freaking personal to him that he was down, like, he was past the I did da 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 da, and it was more like, here's a human experience, you know.
He universalized it, or
backwards, you know, like it became universal because it was so pinpoint.
Yeah, I was just wondering if it was more like just kind of coincidental that he struck on something that you identified with. But
no, well, I don't know.
Perhaps too. I don't know.
I just think he's a genius.
Yeah, what's his work like? I'm not familiar with this person.
Well, he does a lot of text work, so that appeals to me. But he does just really personal. He does a lot of work dealing with literary references. So, like, he has these, like, one really famous piece he's done is, like, the I Am a Man poster, but went back in and, like, corrected, you know, would circle the imperfections on the print and then made paintings out of them. And,
oh,
like,
I think I saw his work at a museum once now.
Yeah, he's all over the place. He does a lot of oil stick. Beautiful text pieces with oil stick that get real clumpy and the texture is beautiful and you know, he references Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man and like it's just so good. But he's, you know, he talks about, you know, being a gay black man. And I'm like, yes, of course. I understand. It's just so good. So I don't know. I think in those lines, I sort of want to head that way.
I guess with your interest in English from before, are you thinking of incorporating literary elements into it too, like that? Or?
Yeah, I write a whole lot. But writing is more, it's just, writing to me is super personal. I don't ever want to share that with anybody. I'd love to write a novel. I mean, I've written, all that bookshelf is like, those are all old journals, notebooks. Yeah, I mean, that's work, you know, like years of just writing and writing. So I write a lot in order to organize my thoughts about making art and stuff. And a lot of times they sort of cross over.
What are some of your favorite writers to read then?
Oh, goodness. I love Sylvia Plath. I love John Steinbeck. I've been reading a lot of Steinbeck recently. I do love Richard Wright and Ralph Ellison. People with sort of real simple, heartfelt Americana, that kind of stuff. I'm a sucker. But I'll read about anything. I mean, kind of all over the place. But my mom, like, for example, when I said my mom told me I was a terrible English major, it was because I hadn't read, you know, Yeats or enough, I didn't know enough, you know, like, I don't know, Alexander Pope, like, I didn't read Chaucer, I couldn't get through Chaucer.
I don't think that's necessarily a requisite to be
Well, she's a good an English teacher.
Anyway. Okay.
So she was coming
back. So she really held your feet to the fire over it.
Yeah. I mean, I had my focus in my English major was African-American literature. And she was like, yeah, honey, that's great. But you need to know the old white men. And I was like, I don't know about that.
I think a lot of that classic British literature is like some of the most boring stuff ever anyway. Like, I can get into the French stuff, like Les Miserables and Hunchback of Notre Dame, Victor Hugo stuff. Like, that's all really exciting, interesting stories. And you can kind of push past the antiquated language to tap into that, but I try to read like Charlotte Bronte, and it's like a bunch of people standing around in corsets not moving. Like,
I do actually like I like the Bronte sisters, but
yeah, that's more of a female thing, I think. Anyway, it's always very popular among ladies.
Yeah,
just like that kind of brand of writing, I just can't connect with it at all. Like, yeah. This is so boring.
Yup. Which I like doing that kind of stuff on my on free time. I guess I wasn't the best English student ever because being forced to read that stuff is like, I'd rather stab my eyeballs.
Do you read much Kurt Vonnegut Jr.? I see him kind of fitting into your kind of humor and satire, and he's a little bit American.
I mean, I've read the
times.
Hits, you know, but not
mm-hmm.
not extensively by any means.
Mm-hmm.
To Kill a Mockingbird is absolutely one of my most favorite books.
That's a good one.
The cadence in that is just brilliant, and I cry every time I read it. I reread it every couple of years.
So I was curious a little bit, what kind of work were you making before you started this whole series? Because you mentioned that when you began it, it was just kind of a escape from work that you didn't weren't enjoying doing.
Mm-hmm.
What was going on before then?
Well, there were two sort of major series that I was working on. When I finished, it's under the archive. When I finished my thesis work for grad school, were these really large, like 60 by 42 charcoal drawings of victims of the Iraq War.
Mm-hmm.
So it was this real, I mean, I love politics, I love talking politics, I love reading about politics, I'm, you know, huge anti-war, peacenik, you know, so like, and I love protest art and political art, so I was making all these really huge charcoal drawings of images that I found primarily off Canadian websites. You can find them on American websites mostly,
mm-hmm.
but and I loved making this body of work, and I felt like it was really, really important, and I'm so glad that I have it and that I did it. But it was just emotionally draining, you know.
Yeah,
I'd walk
really
in,
horrible images.
Yeah,
of people like burned and scarred, and
yeah,
they're not dead either, so you know,
right,
they're still experiencing that,
right. And these were all, the title of the thesis show was all 30,000 more or less, and so, and that was taken from a speech that Bush gave when he was asked how many Iraqi victims. He said 30,000 more or less, and it's like, what more or less, what, like 30,000, maybe a few more moms. 30,000, maybe a few more kids. Like, it was the height of insensitivity. So that was sort of where that project came from. And then I started also doing excerpts of Bush speeches and doing text-based works. But
there must have been a bunch of fun stuff in Bush's speeches. All the stumbling over his words. I do that sometimes. I get lost on a word, but man, he took it to a whole new level.
Everybody stumbles over words. He like, he had brains dripping out of his ears. Like, not so much there. But so that's what I was doing right before I moved to New York, and then because I was working in home studios, I couldn't have the charcoal dust like that. So really, space and environment dictated that I had to sort of let that one go. Just it's too dangerous to be breathing that in your living situation all the time, and it was fucking messy as hell.
Yeah.
And too, I mean, I just felt like I drained myself of that sort of like heart-wrenching kind of stuff. Like, I would be so depressed when I would walk out of the studio at the end of the night. Like, I just drew a dead baby. A real dead baby. Like, so I got up here and was more, you know, was going through the whole adjustment to moving to New York and living in New York and doing that whole thing and trying to find a job. And so I started doing these really snarky text-based pieces that they weren't going really well.
Yeah.
There were some successes. There were also some major failures. And I think I was just trying to... And it was also post-grad school, so
what made the word ones that didn't work not work? Like, just...
They just weren't good. I don't know. I mean, I...
Well, what exactly were they? Were they also based off of things overheard on the street, or...?
No, they were more just really snotty... narratives, like having to do mainly with sex, love, relationship. I mean, really sort of base, like, I mean, really get over that, you know? Yeah. Like, there's so much more in the world that's more interesting. Let the entertainment industry take care of that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I mean some of them are pretty funny, I think, but and some of them I really like and have still hang on to and would show here and there, but the ones that, I don't know, a lot of times if I don't like a piece or I think it's a failure, it goes away, I don't think about it again. I should probably pull them back out and try to learn from that failure, but I just stick them away and I just hide them. So, I don't know, they just weren't good. Yeah.
Are you ever tempted to, like, make these, like, actual labels and, like, stick them on the backs of pieces that you're framing at work? Gorilla bomb somebody's painting.
No. But we're being recorded, right? No, yeah. I've never done anything like that. I threatened to tag. I did a sticker for White Columns because I keep trying to get into the registry, like, for years I've applied to the registry and I keep getting rejected.
Mm-hmm.
And the director of White Columns is an artist also. His name's Matthew Higgs, and we actually frame a lot of his work at my shop.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a piece that said, "Put me in the registry, Higgs, or I'll tag your silly book pages." Pages. And I got into the registry. Nice. A couple months ago.
Art's working to your advantage.
Yeah. So that's fine. No, I mean, it would be kind of funny to make labels out of that. I don't know what the legality of that would be. I mean, it's one thing to pull them up and hand paint them.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, like, destroying someone else's work is not cool. Like, I don't, besides that part of it, like, but the whole actually trying to make stickers that directly mimic, I don't know.
Mm.
That's not what it's about for me.
Yeah.
But I think that's really funny.
Somebody's a jerk to you and you're framing and you're like, you're getting an FU tag on there.
That would be awesome. It's like the guy who buried the Red Sox jersey in front of the new Yankee Stadium.
I didn't hear about that.
I don't know if it really happened. It was probably an apocryphal tale, but supposedly when they tore the old Yankee Stadium down and built a new one, one of the construction workers buried a Red Sox jersey right in front of the front gate, like under the cement and concrete and everything,
yeah.
And then ran his mouth about it, and supposedly they dug it up, or they dug around there to, like, make sure he hadn't done it. And I don't care if it's true or not, I think it's still a really good story.
It's funny how twisted up people get about that
right?
stuff.
Like, those people need to not take themselves so seriously. Jeez.
Well, anything else you wanted to touch on before we go? I'm about out of questions for you.
I don't think so.
No?
I think I covered it.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks for talking with me.
Of course.
We'll see you around.
Okay.
That concludes this episode of Studio Sessions with our guest Alex Gingro. You can find her work online at alexgingro.com. You can also learn more about me at my website, mattcoolman.com. If you'd like to support this program, you can send a donation through PayPal to studiosessionspodcast@gmail.com. Even if you only send $1, your donation helps guarantee I can continue providing interviews with interesting artists for your listening pleasure. And of course, don't forget to visit bigredandshiny.com for future episodes along with other high-quality arts and culture content. Thank you for listening, and see you next time on Studio Sessions.